Skin cancer is the most common of all cancers, affecting more than 2 million Americans each year. This number is rising rapidly. 90% of non-melanoma skin cancers are associated with exposure to ultraviolet radiation, and the risk of melanomas doubles if you've even had one blistering sunburn as a child, or if you have 5 sunburns at any age. But how much sun is too much? What's the best sunscreen? Does your diet influence your propensity to skin cancer? And what about your need for vitamin D? On today's show, we'll have Sean getting us moving and a healthy recipe from Go Healthy's kitchen. Stay tuned. Go Healthy Be Good starts right now. Hello, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live tonight and on your screen every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. If you want to watch a previous episode or find all of our recipes, then go to our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. 1 in 5 Americans will develop skin cancer over the course of their lifetime, and the risk is more than doubled by using tanning beds. But before we start this conversation, let's take a look at this video.
Dear 16-year-old me.
Dear 16-year-old me.
Dear 16-year-old me.
Please don't get that perm. It's not as awesome as you think it's going
to
be.
You have to actually practice in order to learn to play guitar.
Whiskey tastes even worse on the way up.
Dear 16-year-old me, there's going to be a new set of Star Wars movies. Don't watch them. They ruin everything.
Dear 16-year-old me, this is where they took the cancer out. It was something called melanoma.
It's called malignant melanoma.
Malignant melanoma.
Malignant. That's not a very friendly word.
You'll be diagnosed when you're 28.
18.
36.
29.
22.
It's a tumor that starts in your skin cells, the cells that give your hair and skin color.
It's not just skin cancer.
Well, it is.
Well, it is.
But not just the
cut it out and it'll be fine kind, unfortunately.
It's the kind that you have to catch before it spreads.
Because it spreads so fast.
So fast.
To places like your liver, your lungs, your brain.
Yours will be a really rare kind in your left eye, and that's when you'll find out.
That melanoma can show up on your tongue, the palms of your hands, and the soles of your feet.
Your doctors will tell you you're lucky that you caught it early.
Yours will tell you that you need aggressive treatment.
I'll have to tell you it might take a year of chemotherapy.
And you'll need to do some of the injections yourself.
Dear 16-year-old me.
You're doing okay.
You're strong.
But there are some things I want you to know.
I wish I'd known.
That one bad sunburn before you turn 18
doubles your chances of developing melanoma.
That fair skin and red hair means that you're at a higher risk of getting it.
As if ginger people didn't have enough problems.
That you're at higher risk if you've got more than 50 moles.
And if you have a weakened immune system or a family history of skin cancer.
I want you to know the outlook is very good if we can catch it early.
But you have less than a 10% chance of surviving more than 5 years if we don't.
Dear 16-year-old me,
spend more time with family. They mean everything.
If I had one piece of advice for you, don't start the tanning bed. I know you want a healthy glow, but it's going to double my chances of getting melanoma.
Sunscreen.
Your skin's like an elephant. It never forgets.
Dear 16-year-old me, helping spread this message is how you'll honor Glenna's memory. At 16, she's already an incredible lifeguard. She loves the sun and the beach and tanning, but she just doesn't know.
She'll be diagnosed when she's 22 and will lose her battle when she's just 26.
Joining us today is Dr. Ali Hendy, board-certified dermatologist, a fellow of the American Academy of Dermatology and the American College of Mohs Surgery from Chevy Chase, Maryland. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Now tell us, what are the commonest skin cancers?
So the three most common types of skin cancer are in order basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and melanoma, with the majority, two-thirds of all those being basal cell carcinoma.
Now, how is the skin made up anatomically?
Sure. So the skin is made up of the epidermis, which is a very top protective layer, and the dermis. These three skin cancers all arise from the epidermis, which is the most rapidly dividing layer of the skin, which is very a common theme to cancer processes.
And where does each of them happen in the epidermis?
Sure. So the bottom layer of the epidermis is called the basal layer, and those are the cells of origin for basal cell carcinoma. The cells above the basal layer are called squamous cells, and those are the cells that give rise to squamous cell carcinoma. And interdispersed among the basal layer are melanocytes, and those are the cells of origin for melanoma, as the name would suggest.
And so how thick is the whole epidermis?
Oh, it's thinner than a slice of paper. We're talking microns, a fraction of a millimeter.
And yet where those cells arise from determines what type of cancer.
You're absolutely right, yeah.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
How detailed that is. Now, what are the risk factors for skin cancer? We heard some of them on the video with the tanning beds and the sunburns.
Right.
What other risk factors?
So if you're fair-complected, if you're the type of person that burns easily, you're at much higher risk, and the reason is your skin is not as protected as someone who's darkly pigmented. If you have 50 or more moles, if you've had extensive sun exposure or tanning bed exposure, those are all the main risk factors. There's some smaller risks, such as if you're immunocompromised or if you're on certain medications, those also increase your chances.
So when you say 50 moles or more, you mean if you're just born with moles, you're more at risk?
Exactly. And you could get new moles up to the age of 40. So if you're a moly person and those moles are atypical moles, and that's something that a board-certified dermatologist can tell you, that puts you at a higher risk for developing melanoma.
Now, are there any genetic predispositions to skin cancer?
There absolutely are. I mean, the main genetic predisposition is the type of skin you get from your parents.
Sure.
And then for melanoma, there are certain genes that have been discovered that put you at higher risk for melanoma, just as in breast cancer, for example.
So if there is melanoma in your family, then you'd need to be a lot more careful, a lot more aware?
Exactly. A first-degree relative puts you at a much higher risk of developing melanoma compared to someone who doesn't have that risk factor.
Now let's talk about basal cell carcinomas, because you said they were more common than the other kinds. What do they look like? And then we'll talk about how they spread, but how would you recognize one?
Sure. So I tell patients, if you ever get a pimple that doesn't go away within a week, a month, or 6 weeks, you should have it looked at. And that's because basal cell carcinomas look exactly like a pimple. They could be pink. They're often somewhat pearly. They reflect the light differently, as you see in that image. And they don't seem to go away. And if you wait long enough, they'll even start to bleed. So these are all pictures of basal cell carcinomas.
So the first one was quite red. This one looks just raised and more skin-colored.
Right, it's subtle. That one, as you saw, fell in the crease of the skin. That can happen. So if you get a new pink or red bump that just doesn't seem to go away, or comes and goes but never completely goes away, it should be looked at. It can be a basal cell skin cancer.
Now, it's a cancer. How does it spread?
So the good thing with basal cell carcinomas is they typically don't spread. They grow in the skin, they get bigger, but it's exceedingly rare for basal cell carcinoma to spread to other organs unless it's been neglected for decades. And when I see my patients for surgery, I tell them that I have good news for them, and that good news is that they have a basal cell skin cancer. It's a type that typically doesn't spread, and it's easier to cure than a wart, and it really is because the cure rates are as high as 99% for basal cell carcinoma.
Well, that's really encouraging. Now, what about squamous cell carcinomas? You mentioned them. How common are they, and what do they look like?
So of the main types of skin cancer, squamous is the second most common type. Basal cells account for 70% of the skin cancers, and squamous cells account for about 15%. As you see in this image, this is the first image was a squamous cell carcinoma by the ear, and this is on the scalp. They're typically pink, like basal cell carcinomas, but they tend to get rough and scaly, and they may have some dead skin on top of them, which kind of sets them apart from basal cell carcinomas. But for someone who's not trained at looking at these, it can be hard to differentiate. And at times, even the experts can't differentiate unless they do a biopsy.
Mm. So it's a good idea if you've got something that you think is suspicious, just to have your doctor check it out.
Yeah.
And if you still, you're reassured, but you're still not sure, you might ask for a referral to a dermatologist.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. And don't take the chance.
Exactly.
How do squamous cell carcinomas spread? Do they?
So squamous cell carcinomas have the potential to spread if they're not treated early. And they typically spread, like most skin cancers, through the vascular and lymphatic system. But often the first place you would catch it is in a lymph node. And, you know, that's the stage you don't want to get to, because you want to catch it and treat it before it gets to that point.
Hmm.
In the general population, it's about a 5 to 10% chance of that happening.
And how long does it take to go from a squamous cell carcinoma to an actual spread?
You know, that's a tough question, because every patient is different. Every cancer is different. It could be anywhere from months to years.
Wow, just months sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you think it might be, you need to act and get it checked
out. Exactly.
Now, these cancers, basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma, they have a precancerous stage, don't they?
Squamous cell carcinomas do specifically, and that precancerous stage is called an actinic keratosis. And that's the type of lesion that occurs in heavily sun-exposed or sun-damaged skin. It feels like sandpaper. So if you rub your forehead or your scalp or your nose and you feel a rough patch, that feels like sandpaper, and it doesn't completely go away, it kind of persists, that's likely to be a precancer. And it's called an actinic keratosis.
Easy enough to treat?
At that stage, they don't even need surgery. They typically don't need a biopsy, and they could be treated with a cold spray called liquid nitrogen or even some creams that are available.
Wow, that sounds easy. Coming up next, we'll show you how to cook some really healthy food. Don't miss it. We'll be back after a short break.
So I was reading The Great Hope, and I came across a phrase that says, "It is the law both of the intellectual and the spiritual nature that by beholding we become changed. The mind gradually adapts itself to the subjects upon which it is allowed to dwell." It struck me how much in this chapter and the things it talks about, so much in our world tries to distract us, if can be focusing on bad things, focusing on anything but God's goodness, His law, His word, Scripture, and just how much we need to be making sure our foundation is sure and that we are founded on Christ. Verses John 17 says, "This is life eternal, that we might know you and Jesus Christ whom you have sent, and that in that we have hope."
Welcome back to Go Healthy. Phil's in the kitchen with us today. What recipe have you got for us, Phil?
Oh, well, we're making basically a tomato pasta sauce.
Really? Anything special about this?
Well, you know what? First off, I love sauces that are kind of basic.
Yeah.
So this is the deal with this sauce. This is another thing, another thing that's interesting is that most of the time you throw your sauce on a pan, you put it on the stove. This one's completely raw.
Really? Oh, I love raw sauces. What's in it?
Oh, basically, it's simple ingredients.
Yep.
You're looking for your pasta, any type of pasta, which is going to be your favorite.
Right.
And then on top of that pasta, we're putting about 1.5 pounds of tomatoes. You're going to cut them in quarters.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do 2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 1 clove of garlic, salt, and 1/4 cup fresh basil, which is going to be chopped.
All right.
So it's very basic. In fact, I joke that while I'm Irish, I kind of wish that I was Italian, because I love sauces and things like this. So
we could arrange it.
You're going to take care of the garlic for us.
Yeah, this is my little gadget. My brother-in-law gave it to me for Christmas one year, and I thought, well, that's a really funny gift. But you know, I love it, because I just pop my garlic. I can put 6 cloves in here, roll them all up, throw it out, and it comes out naked.
That's pretty good.
It is.
I always use a knife and kind of pound down on the knife.
Yeah.
But that's a lot easier.
Yeah.
I like that.
Shall I throw it in?
Throw it into this blender. We're going to put our tomatoes in here as well. And then we're going to put our seasonings as well. Now, the thing that I want to do is make sure that we can put in the salt.
the oil.
And then we want how much of the basil?
About half of it, because we're going to save that to put on top for decoration.
Oh, nice. So there we go. About half of that.
And the thing that I like about this is, like a lot of our recipes, it's very colorful.
Mm.
So you've got the bright reds, you've got the green. And what I like to do is I like to bite down, and I like to kind of chew on the food a little bit.
Texture. Yep.
So I'm not going to liquefy this. I like to have a little bit of chunky sauce.
Great.
So we're going to mix it.
Okay. Ooh,
it's a little
wow.
bit chunky.
Yeah, nice. Very nice.
And it's very basic. If these noodles were hot, then it might cook the sauce a little bit.
It would just warm it through.
But it's going to be very basic, and basically, it's going to be a raw sauce.
Hmm. That looks really pretty on the spinach. What is it? Linguine?
It goes perfectly with the green. And then I like to just sprinkle a little bit on top. You can put as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing that I like to think about is there are no rules in cooking except stop, drop, and roll. But if it gets to that point, you should forget about the cooking. Beyond that, it's your own thing and it's just guidelines.
You have to be Irish to think of that. Alrighty, let's have some. I love raw sauces. That has a real power pack punch. That basil and tomato, oh, I love it.
This is one of my favorites, and you get the freshness of the food, you get the tastes and the seasonings together, and it comes out really nice.
Boy, that's good. That is good. I wish you could taste it. Now let's have a look at this video.
For the most part, there is nothing quite like playing golf on the world's biggest stage, chasing the sun around the globe. Each and every week, PGA Tour tournaments are filled with incredible drama and excitement.
McIlroy has finally realized his dream. He has ascended to the top of the world. Tiger Woods is a winner again. And how appropriate it comes at Bay Hill.
But there is also a real danger that comes from spending the better part of every day playing the world's greatest game in front of millions of people under that same sun. Hi, I'm PGA Tour player Brian Davis, and I'm a skin cancer survivor. During my career, I've been treated for various skin cancers 6 times. I believe that because I've been personally touched by skin cancer, I have a responsibility to use this platform to bring awareness to its dangers and to as many people as I can. And that's why I've been so involved with the Skin Cancer Foundation for such a long time. Over the past 31 years, more people have been diagnosed with skin cancer than all other cancers combined. More than 2 million people will be diagnosed with skin cancer this year alone. 1 in 5 Americans will develop skin cancer during the course of a lifetime. Scary numbers for sure. And on our tour, we know the devastation that this disease can cause. We know the risks, and we try to take preventive measures to protect ourselves.
Skin cancer has become very prevalent. I think in a profession where we're outside all the time, it's important to look after our skin. You know, it's important to put on that sunscreen.
For myself, being out here, you know, it's just a daily ritual of putting on sun cream all over my face and my arms that's exposed to the sun every day.
I think it's very, very important, especially someone like myself who has fair skin. You know, we're in the sun so much and for such a long time during the day, and you know, skin protection is something that is very important to not just me, but all the guys out here.
Now we're trying to raise awareness about the harm the sun's UV rays can do if you're not properly protecting yourself. And whether you're an avid golfer or a weekend hacker, whether you're a golf junkie or new to the sport, we want to make sure you're armed with the facts. So that when we visit your town, you can come out and spend an exciting day under the sun with us, and then go home the real winner.
It starts off at your head, being smart, but then more physically, it's wearing a hat that has a brim on it. I think that will help protect your face from the sun. Wearing sunglasses that have UV protection as well, that will help prevent issues with your eyes. Wearing clothes that are long in nature, long sleeves, pants as opposed to shorts or short sleeves. And then obviously wearing sunscreen. It's important that before you go out and are in the sun, that you apply sunscreen about a half hour before you're out so that it has an opportunity to get into your skin. And also that you reapply the sunscreen every 2 or 3 hours while you're out in the sun.
It's always one of those situations where you don't really think about it until something occurs. And I kind of try and remind, kids when they're out here watching now, make sure that they're wearing their sunblock.
They're sitting out there watching, just baking in the sun. Find shade, wear large hats, and apply as much sunscreen as they can. A few seconds a day could save your life. That's the best way I can explain it.
The best players in the world know what to do. The real question is, do you?
Sounds like you don't just need a good caddy, you need a good sunscreen.
Absolutely,
as well,
hey? Absolutely.
Now, we were just talking about skin cancers, and you mentioned the precancerous stage or the actinic keratosis, and I like your the book you wrote.
Thank you.
I love this atlas. You know, I love pictures. This atlas is full of pictures. It's great.
Everybody loves pictures, and this is an easy one to read because it's mostly pictures, and it's geared towards primary care providers, but the general public would get benefit from seeing some of these pictures and knowing when to go see a physician.
Right, yeah. Right. And this is probably a thickened actinic keratosis, yeah?
Right, so that's a very close-up picture. I don't know if the viewers can see this as a picture of actinic keratosis. That sandpaper feel is because of the dead skin that you see that's kind of adherent to the skin. And there's variants called hypertrophic, which become really thick. Mm. But they're rough, they're scaly, and they don't seem to go away.
Right.
But the good news is, even if you have this, only about 10% go on to become squamous cell carcinomas.
Really?
But we usually treat them because you don't want to, why take that chance when you could treat something with a topical remedy or with a superficial destruction using a cold spray.
Right. So that was a really thickened one. These are thinner, more typical ones?
Right. These are probably more typical. They're subtle. The skin may look a little blotchy, but it's not the type of blotchy that's smooth. It's the type of blotchy that's very rough and scaly. Yeah.
Right. So we've talked about basal cell carcinomas, squamous cell carcinomas. Let's move on to the really scary ones, which are the melanomas. And how common are they, and what is it that's so bad about them?
Right. So melanoma is the third most common type of skin cancer, and it's estimated about 1 in 50 Americans will get melanoma. And although it's the third most common type of skin cancer, it's the deadliest.
Mm.
So the majority of deaths from skin cancer are from melanoma. And in the U.S. alone, one person dies about every hour from advanced melanoma. So it's a scary thought. And
wow. So one person will die from it while we're doing this interview?
Absolutely, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really sobering. What are the characteristic features of a melanoma? How's someone going to tell if they have it?
Right. So the classic melanoma is a dark patch, and by patch I mean a flat lesion like you see on the image, that has different colors, irregular borders. There might be dark brown, black, gray, pink.
Oh, that's a classic picture, isn't it?
Those are typical things. It has all those features. It's typically flat when it starts. It does become raised over time. Those are more advanced melanomas, and you want to catch it at the stage where it's flat.
Mm.
And it's typically changing. There's a rule called the ABCD rule for melanoma, which is A is for asymmetry, B is for borders that are irregular, C is for color, different colors, D is for diameter, which is greater than 6 millimeters, although you could catch them even smaller than that.
Mm.
And then E has been added, and E is for evolving. So a skin lesion that's changing, getting bigger, getting darker, bleeding, the colors changing, shouldn't be neglected. There's a chance it could be a melanoma.
Do they ever get itchy or... Yeah.
They can get itchy, they can get symptoms, but not always.
Not always.
By the time when it gets itchy, it's usually if it's inflamed or if it's been scratched, or if it's elicited enough of an immune response to cause that itching. But you don't have to have it for it to happen.
For it to be.
Yeah.
Now, how do they spread?
So melanomas, just like most other cancers, spread through the lymphatic system, which is the lymph vessels, and they go to the lymph nodes. But they also are known to spread through the vascular system. And once it's spread, it's typically spread throughout the body. It's usually caught in the lymph node, but that doesn't mean it's not elsewhere. It's a good indicator, but it doesn't mean it's confined to that area.
Hmm. So if someone was to have a melanoma, say, on their big toe, how would you check the lymph nodes?
The most basic way is by physical exam, where the physician, and I teach my patients to do this, feel the draining lymph nodes in that area. So if it's on your right foot, it's going to be in the right groin, right along the groin, you press and you feel for something that feels like a peanut or an M&M. Mm-hmm. That's the most basic way. That's what's recommended for patients that have thin melanomas because their risk is negligible. If you have a thicker melanoma and there's a higher chance that it's spread and it hasn't, you know, been caught, you know, it hasn't been shown to spread, there's procedures where you remove the lymph nodes to look at the lymph nodes to see if they've spread.
Right. Okay. Now, how do you treat skin cancers?
Okay. So the mainstay treatment for all skin cancers is removing them. It's a process called excision. Mm-hmm. That's the only treatment that, you know, has a high cure rate for melanomas if caught early and for most other skin cancers.
So a sharp knife.
Sharp knife, yeah. There are other remedies, such as creams or scraping and burning. They are effective. Mm-hmm. And every patient should have a discussion with their physician. What is the cure rate for my skin cancer with this type of treatment? For standard excision, the cure rate for, let's say, basal cell and squamous cell carcinoma is about 90%. For creams and topical destruction, it ranges anywhere from 70 to 85 or 90%. And the gold standard is the Mohs surgery technique. That's where the surgeon is also trained to do the pathology. And the tissue is removed and examined in a way that every single cell at the edges and at the bottom is examined. And with that technique, the cure rate is as high as 99%.
That sounds like the way to go, but is it more expensive?
It is more expensive. It's not indicated for every skin cancer. But when you account for the fact that there's less recurrences, less repeat surgery, smaller defects which require smaller reconstruction, it's actually very cost effective.
So you've got that higher rate of cure, mm-hmm. and therefore you also get peace of mind, greater peace of mind, I guess, which doesn't really come with a price.
Absolutely, and less deformity. It gives you the best cosmetic results because you're leaving this or removing the smallest amount of healthy tissue because you don't have to guess if you get it all.
Yeah. Right. We're going to come back to that by mm-hmm. surgery. But coming up next, we'll explore our options for sun protection. First, though, let's take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, seatbelt, airbags and sunscreen. Want to get rid of that old tattoo? And parents allow sunburn? A New York study has shown that most people don't realise that their skin can be sun damaged while driving, even when the windows are up. That being the case, research is expected to find more skin cancers on the left side of the body, and sure enough, they did. Except for those driving in cars with tinted windows. So remember to protect your skin from sun damage, even when driving. 1 in 5 Americans have a tattoo, and 1 in 7 regret that decision. The American Society for Dermatologic Surgery reports that its doctors performed nearly 100,000 tattoo removals last year, a large increase from previous years. When tattoo ink is injected through the epidermis and into the dermis, it becomes permanent. To remove it, laser is used to break the pigment into smaller particles, which can then be metabolized, stored, or excreted by the body. Usually 6 to 10 treatments are required with several weeks healing between. The treatments are painful and may cause scarring. So avoid buyer's regret. Don't get a tattoo. Sunburn in children is a known risk factor for skin cancer. A Danish study looked at the association between parents' behavior in the sun and their attitudes to tanning and their children's risk of sunburn. In children aged 7 to 17, the risk of sunburn increased when their parents had experienced sunburn themselves or if they had a very positive attitude to tanned skin. Parents, protect your child's tender skin from sunburn and you'll reduce their lifetime risk of skin cancer. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben and that's today's medical news report.
I know I'm looking for something, but what? Peace? Purpose? Meaning? I'm still not sure, but I know it's going to take faith.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good, and we're talking about skin cancers today, and therefore we have to tell you what to look for in a sunscreen. So, Dr. Ellie, what do we look for? You know, there's been some studies that say no sunscreens, they might prevent burning, but they don't necessarily prevent cancer. What would you say about that? How could that be?
A lot of the studies are really hard to design because the skin cancers that we're seeing today are the result of the sunburns and the sun exposure over decades. So we're talking 20, 30 years of sun exposure leading to skin cancer. The vast majority of studies that have been done and the stance of myself and the American Academy of Dermatology is sunscreens are only one of the ways to protect yourself from the sun. There's always, you know, seeking shade, you know, wearing sun protective clothing, but the best evidence shows that they do help reduce the chance of skin cancer, and consumers should rely on them as one of the mechanisms of minimizing their risk.
Great. Now, we've got a lineup here. This one says, what SPF for? Now, what does SPF stand for?
So SPF stands for sun protection factor, and it only applies to the UVB rays. As you know, there's UVA and UVB. They're both are implicit in causing skin cancer. But the sun protection factor, the SPF, only measures blockage of UVB. And an SPF of 4 really gives you minimal protection. This is almost like, you know, the glass in your car. You know, it gives you minimal protection. You could still burn, and you definitely need something stronger than that.
Okay, but it smells really pretty. You smell this. It smells like
it reminds me
fruit salad.
Of my childhood and smelling it on everyone at the beach, yes.
That's right.
Yes.
It's what we all used to smell like, wasn't it? Now, this one has SPF 15. Now, is it true that 4 means you can stay up 4 times longer, or how is that measured? Or what does it mean?
Right. It's the science behind this is a little complicated, but basically what they're measuring is the amount of time it takes for your skin to turn red. It's called a minimal erythema dose. So with SPF 4, it takes 4 times as long than it's, if you didn't have it. But that, you know, that's not a really good measure for consumers to think of. You need at least an SPF of 15 or ideally 30 or higher to give you adequate protection.
So 58, this is the minimum. This is just a smelly scent.
Right.
That's just going to make the sand stick to you. Okay. So now we're starting to talk because we see SPF 15 in a lot of women's cosmetics, mm-hmm. in our moisturizers and things.
Okay. Which is a step in the right direction because not only is it skin cancer that we're concerned about, the UVA and UVB rays, UVA more so, are known to cause aging, the breakdown of collagen in your skin. So if you're young and you're not concerned about skin cancer, at least do it for your looks.
Yes, yes. And these say UVA, UVB. If the number reflects your UVB protection, how do you know that you're getting good UVA protection?
So there's new guidelines that the FDA put into place that went into place December of this past year, 2012, that require manufacturers to indicate if they have UVA specifically in the bottle. So you want to look for that UVA protection. There is no number measurement, but you should look for it, and it should have that UVA protection, or it should say broad spectrum UVA and UVB. You want protection from both.
So you can't just rely on broad spectrum. You need to have that UVA
exactly.
written, right?
Exactly. Although with the new regulations, if it says broad spectrum, it needs to have UVA protection. Prior to that, a lot of manufacturers used that term kind of frivolously, and they didn't have UVA protection. But as of December of 2012, if that's on the bottle,
then
it should have UVA protection.
All right. Now, now we've got these two, a 50 and a 90 plus. Which is better? I look at this and I think, oh, the 90 plus is going to be stronger. Is that true?
It's stronger not by, let's say, if this was 100, it wouldn't be twice as strong. It's stronger by a small margin. So what I tell patients is find one that you like that's SPF 30 or higher and reapply it. There's a perception that higher SPF means you could stay out longer. That's not true. Regardless of the SPF, you still need to reapply every 2 to 3 hours or after your skin gets wet.
So straight after you get out of the water, then you'd reapply it.
Yep.
Otherwise, every 2 to 3 hours if you're just lying there tanning.
Mm-hmm. Which you shouldn't be doing anyway.
Sorry, if you're lying there just enjoying the warmth of the sunshine.
Under a shade, yes.
But, you know, that brings me to another question. Is, you know, sunlight is important for good health, and one big thing is vitamin D. So what do you say about how do you balance your need to avoid sun damage, sunburn, and your need for vitamin D?
You know, there's been so much controversy over the issue of vitamin D and the sun and your health that I'm sure your viewers are very confused, and a lot of physicians are confused. But here is my perspective. If you're at risk for skin cancer, or if you've had melanoma, or at risk for melanoma, or if you have a family history, you don't have to sacrifice your skin to get your vitamin D. There is a healthy alternative to getting your vitamin D that includes a diet that's rich in foods that are vitamin D rich, and mm-hmm. supplements. So the skin doesn't have to be sacrificed for you to stay healthy and get your adequate amount of vitamin D.
All right. Now, are there any components in these sunscreens that you might be concerned about putting on your skin and absorbing through your skin, or putting on children? Mm-hmm. And if so, is there a better alternative?
Right. So with children, the American Academy of Family Pediatrics does not recommend using sunscreens in children under the age of 6 months. So before 6 months, keep them out of the sun, cover them up. After 6 months, sunscreens are generally accepted to be safe. What I personally recommend and what I use on my little boy is a sunscreen is not a chemical sunscreen, that's a physical barrier. Mm-hmm. And those are products that are solely or purely titanium dioxide or zinc oxide.
So titanium dioxide or zinc oxide, mm-hmm. that's the same as what I use. And you look a bit white, but it's that's protecting you.
It protects you, and it stays on your skin. It doesn't really get absorbed, and that's how it blocks the rays, by blocking the rays.
And you're still needing to reapply every 2 hours?
You still need to reapply every 2 hours, yeah. And overall, even with the chemical sunscreens, the vast majority of the studies have been shown that they're safe. The small potential risk of a chemical sunscreen mm-hmm. is far less than the known hazard of a skin cancer or melanoma or dying from your melanoma. So, you know, a lot of times in life we have to ask ourselves, what are the risks, what are the benefits, you know, and weigh them out and use what you right. makes sense for you.
Yes, absolutely. So perhaps a mineral base or one of these, mm-hmm. make your choice. And if you don't spend a lot of time in the sun, you might want to add some vitamin D as a supplement, or think about the foods that you have. I think that just about covers it. That's great. Now let's watch another ageless advantage.
Studies in the 1950s showed Adventist men to have low levels of total cholesterol, an important factor in preventing heart disease. Nowadays, cholesterol can be divided into healthy and unhealthy fractions. A recent study again compared Adventist men to their non-Adventist neighbors and found their unhealthy, or LDL, cholesterol to be 9 points lower. A vegetarian diet and regular exercise were thought to make the difference. A lower LDL cholesterol is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Have you missed a previous episode, or you want to download one of our recipes? Then visit our website at hopetv.org/gohealthy. We're also on iTunes, so just look for our video podcast there. Now, if you have a question about skin cancer, then call us now at 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. I have a wonderful expert just waiting for your hard questions. Thanks for posting your comments and your questions on Facebook. Thanks for your calls. And here are some questions we haven't had a chance to answer on previous shows. Sergeant Larenz Sylvia asked, 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with thyroid disease, have been on medication since. Will I have to take the medication for the rest of my life, or is there anything I can eat or do to get off the medication? Well, most people who need thyroid replacement therapy really do need to stay on it for the rest of their lives. But be sure that you take getting enough iodine in your diet. Support your thyroid with a good diet and exercise. So those are just some little tips. And be sure that you have a test done at least once a year with your doctor to be sure that you're on the right dose, because you can't just take it and forget about it. One caller asked, does weight loss have anything to do with a hypothyroid diagnosis? Usually a hypothyroid diagnosis would cause you to gain weight. If you then go on thyroxine treatment and you overdose, then you would lose weight. So that might be one connection that I could find there. Latrice posted on Facebook, I have a question on how to deal with boils. Wow, great question, Latrice. What I think is a good remedy, I use charcoal powder, and I mix that charcoal powder up, sort of 1 spoon of charcoal powder, 1 spoon of ground flaxseed, mix them up with some water, pop them on a paper towel. It'd be like paste that you might, like peanut butter kind of consistency. Pop it on a paper towel, cover one side with your cling film, your plastic wrap, and then you can put that on a boil. Put it on overnight, and it will actually draw on a boil. Some people use grated cabbage or a grated potato even. Those make great poultices, and they work wonderfully for boils. If you start seeing that redness spreading up your limb, though, you want to see your doctor straight away. You're starting to get a blood poisoning. So don't go that far. A caller from Nevada said, if I've had I've had other types of cancer, such as cervical cancer, am I at greater risk for developing breast cancer? There is not an association between cervical cancer and breast cancer. There is an association between colon cancer and breast cancer. So just there are associations and then there are not, and it depends on genetics. But most of these are not gene-related, and typically cervical cancer is more related to the HPV virus. Thanks for sending your questions. Keep them coming. I love them. Don't forget to call us right now with your question on skin cancer. 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, before we go back to Dr. Ali, let's take a look at this video we've prepared for you. Bon appetit. How many carrots have you eaten in your lifetime? Countless, I'm sure. In fact, many of us were weaned on cooked, mashed carrots. Originally, carrots were eaten for their leaves and their seeds. Nowadays, though, we just eat the taproot and we tend to throw the leaves away. However, dill, fennel, cumin are aromatic relatives of the carrot. Carrots are a summer crop and can be companion plants. It's said that if they're intercrop with tomatoes, that you get a better yield from your tomatoes. And if you leave them to flower, well, they attract predatory wasps, which can deal with your garden pests. In the humble carrot are several compounds. Polyacetylenes are compounds that can kill cells. So some people use carrot juice as part of their fight against cancer. They also have antifungal compounds in them, which can give them a bitter taste. Steaming and stir frying are great ways to eat carrots, and many people use baby carrots as part of their weight loss snacking regime. A baby carrot has only 5 calories. Bon appetit. Now, we're just talking about skin cancers today, and we were talking before the break about Mohs surgery, which is what you specialize. How did Mohs surgery get that unusual name?
That's a great question. Most people think it's an acronym, but it's not. There was actually a doctor named Dr. Frederick Mohs, who has since passed away, and it's named after him, who invented the technique of Mohs surgery.
Which is?
Basically, it's a process where the surgeon acts not only as a surgeon, but also as the pathologist and the reconstructive surgeon. Standard tissue processing, when something is cut out and sent to the lab, requires vertical processing of the tissue, which in essence samples less than 1% of the specimen, depending on the size of the specimen. With Mohs surgery, the tissue is processed in a horizontal fashion. So you're getting the entire peripheral and deep margin of the tissue on a microscope slide, and the surgeon then reads it and the tissue is mapped. So you know exactly where the roots are and you know exactly where to go back to. So it takes the guesswork out of essentially curing skin cancer.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. It was so basic when you think about it, isn't it?
It is.
And so it turns that multi-step, possibly multi-step process into a one-stop shop.
Yep.
Great. I think we've got some images there. And now, is this one of your patients?
This was one of my patients. And if the image comes up, you'll see there's a small pink area on the forehead. That was a basal cell skin cancer.
All right.
And you see it's kind of pink, it's pearly, it's shiny. And basal cells often have roots that extend underneath the skin that unless you're using the microscope, you would miss.
Right.
So the next image is the area after the cancer has been removed after, in this case, it was three stages of Mohs surgery. The blue line.
When you say three stages, you took some, you went to the microscope, we haven't got all of it yet, and then the next stage, again, you repeat. So you're going deeper and wider,
If the cancer is at the superficial edge, you go wider. If it's in the center, you go deeper.
Okay.
So you're seeing the pictures of the area closed, and this final picture is the patient 4 months after surgery, showing that just because you have skin cancer doesn't mean you'll be disfigured. You could look normal, and I always tell patients the goal is that in about 3 or 4 months, someone seeing you at a conversational distance should have a hard time telling anything was done.
Wow. That is very encouraging, because having a skin, our face is what's exposed to the sun more than any part of our body, and the thought of having a skin cancer, especially for a woman, I looked like a female there, that's right in the middle of your forehead. But it's reassuring that is almost invisible.
Right. It's scary, but you don't have to be disfigured.
Now, what if you embark on a Mohs surgery and you can't clear it in the office? What then?
You know, that's exceedingly rare. In the 7,000 cases that I've done over the past, 7, 8 years, it's only happened a handful of times. Then there's options. You get another colleague involved to remove. In those cases, it was the tumor going into the bone, for example, or for tumors tracking in a nerve, which makes it impossible to remove in an office setting. So you get another surgical colleague involved. The goal always should be to get it out and get it out completely. Only if it absolutely cannot, be removed should radiation be tried, because radiation just suppresses it. It doesn't necessarily cure it. So the goal is to get it out. But it's very rare that you can't get it all out during the Mohs surgery procedure.
Now, I think we have a website address there for so that people could find a Mohs surgeon, is that what you call yourself?
That's exactly. Mohs surgeon is right, yeah.
A Mohs surgeon?
Yeah.
So that website is there, and it's pretty up-to-date.
It's very up-to-date. It helps you find not only a Mohs surgeon who's had the extensive training required to be a member of the Mohs College. So the Mohs College is not actually a college or a university. It's an association of Mohs surgeons that have fellowship training, and that's really what you want to look for.
Well, that's really good advice. Now, also, tell us about mole mapping.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we bandy about, but what exactly is it?
So mole mapping is something that you could do at home with just, drawing, having a little body map and drawing where your moles are and keeping track of those moles. Or it could be done more professionally at your doctor's office, where the moles are either taken, pictures are taken and mapped so they can be followed. It's a good way of tracking moles for those patients that have a lot of moles and are at risk for melanoma. And the goal is to catch moles that are evolving or changing. And those are the moles that are at risk for becoming melanoma.
And if you have a lot of moles, you can't see the ones on your back, so you do need to rely on someone else.
Or you could use two mirrors. You could use a long mirror and a handheld mirror to get the idea of the landscape of your moles. The goal isn't to memorize every mole. It's to have an idea of what the landscape looks like. So if one is acting differently, we call that the ugly duckling, it'll stand out. But you're not going to know unless you're looking.
Right. And you're repetitively looking, like on a regular basis.
Once a month.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, remember to call us with your question about skin cancer. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Go healthy for good. We'll be back after a short break, so stay right there.
All around the world, Seventh-day Adventists are reading one chapter of the Bible per day. We call it Revived by His Word. Please join in and visit the Revived by His Word website. Open today's reading and read the accompanying blog. Add your comments or read the comments of others. Get the Google Calendar to remind you, or download the printable calendar of the reading program. Learn more about Revived by His Word and how you can tell others about this project.
Whatever your anxieties and trials, spread out your case before the Lord. Your spirit will be braced for endurance. The way will be open for you to disentangle yourself from embarrassment and difficulty. weaker and more helpless you know yourself to be, the stronger will you become in his strength. The heavier your burdens, the more blessed the rest in casting them upon your burden bearer.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking your health questions, especially ones on skin cancer. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. So pick up the phone, call us now. But let's take a look at this next clip. Watch.
The problem with diagnosing melanoma in the year 2010 is that we don't have any objective way to diagnose this disease. And many people are concerned about this disease because melanoma is a potentially lethal form of skin cancer. And so it would be great to be able to diagnose this disease at the very earliest stages so we could cure it.
We have developed an imaging system, a non-invasive imaging system, and we are hoping to be able to detect melanoma at an early stage before it spreads and becomes dangerous to the patient.
So although we're in our earliest stages of developing this technology, the data we have so far is very promising. We've currently scanned about 20 patients with irregular moles and people that are susceptible to melanoma. And of those patients, all of the melanomas have been able to be detected with this scanner.
We record a reference image at ambient temperature of the lesion and the area surrounding the lesion. Next, we apply cooling. We cool the lesion and the surrounding area with air. We interpret these images, and basically we are able to visualize metabolic activity related to cancerous lesions in these images.
We, at this point, are not able to say that this instrument is able to replace the clinical judgment of a dermatologist, but we envision that this will be useful as a tool in helping to diagnose early stage melanomas, and we're very enthusiastic about the promise of this technology for improving our ability to prevent people from actually dying of melanoma.
Interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, I think we have a caller on the line, Rosa from Georgia. Rosa, welcome to Go Healthy. What's your question?
Thank you. I would like to know if having facial laser hair removal on my upper lip can that cause cancer?
Good question. If for hair removal, a lot of ladies have hair removal around their face, will that put them at risk of skin cancer?
There's no evidence that laser hair removal increases your risk for skin cancer, so you should be fine.
So that's reassuring for Rosa. Now I have a text question here. As a woman, I really like to tan in the summer and to apply some sun tanning oil. How can I protect my skin from developing cancer?
The hard answer is you need to stop tanning and seek for alternatives to get that glow if that's what you desire, such as sunless tanning products. That doesn't mean you have to stay indoors and be a hermit. You could go outdoors, but you know, if you have to be outdoors, you want to be outdoors between 11, before 11 or after 3 p.m. Avoid the peak hours of the sun. Wear protective clothing, and there's a lot of products on the market. You could find them on the internet that have what's called UPF, which is the measure of sun protection in clothing. And again, sunscreens are one way, hats and sunglasses. So you just need to be smart. You don't need to be indoors. You could enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah.
And live your life and yet protect yourself.
Great. Now, Carolyn from Kansas called and unfortunately dropped a call, but she asked, what are the symptoms of skin cancer for dark-skinned people? Are they the same?
So if you're an African-American or Hispanic or Asian, your chances of skin cancer are generally lower. But study after study has shown that if you get a skin cancer, it's often diagnosed at a later stage. So that population tends to have their diagnosis made at a later stage when it's more likely to be advanced or metastatic. Mm. So in African Americans, Hispanic Asians, the most common place for melanoma, for example, is on the palms of the hands or the palms of the soles, the soles of the feet, yep. And also under the fingernails. If you have a dark streak that's getting wider or darker under one of your fingernails or toenails, that should be evaluated. So they can look different and it's in different locations, but there needs to be awareness on the part of the patients and physicians that it can happen. Mm. It's not unheard of. It can happen, and we need to do a better job at catching it earlier.
Well, now, what about dietary factors to prevent skin cancer?
So there's very little good data for in that arena. The best study that I've seen was on green tea extract. There's some evidence that green tea extract can help with minimizing chances for basal cell carcinoma. But the best studies and the best evidence shows that minimizing the exposure to the damaging ultraviolet radiation, either from the sun or tanning beds, is one of the best mechanisms. That's the one risk factor you have control over. You can't change your genes, you can't change your skin type, right. But you do have control over how much sun you expose yourself to.
Right. I think I've seen animal studies that when animals were supplemented with some of the antioxidant vitamins like A, C, and E, they had less skin cancers when they were exposed to UV light. So it might be the same for a human.
Right. And
well.
You know, I'm excited, and you know, all dermatologists are excited to, you know, for those studies to be confirmed in humans.
Yeah,
and,
it'd be great.
But my feelings are, if it doesn't hurt, and you could try it. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Hendy. Our hour has flown by. Remember, sun exposure is an important factor in the maintenance of good health. But like anything, you can have too much of a good thing. So be sun smart. Cover up in the hottest part of the day. If you're out in the sun, always wear a hat. Avoid burning by either taking cover or wearing plenty of sunscreen. And when it comes to choosing sunscreens, be wise. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. We'll see you next time.